Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. It's October 7th, a Monday morning. Brand new episode of Let There Be Talk. My guest today is Mark Osegueda from Death Angel. So I'm going to make this episode a Metal Monday. Metal Monday, yeah! Metal Monday edition, man. Death Angel, one of my favorite all-time speed metal bands. Thrash metal, speed metal, whatever you want to call it. To come out of the Bay Area. If you haven't heard of Death Angel, let me tell you, they started in 1982. They immediately became a Bay Area favorite. Five guys, under 18, still in high school, sign a record deal and just write some of the most insane, vicious metal to come out of the Bay Area. Still to this day, one of my favorite speed metal thrash songs is Voracious Souls, done by Death Angel. Check it out on iTunes. Love this band. I love Mark. We're old friends. It was great to catch up with him. I mean, just so cool to see a guy still singing in a band for 26 years. I mean, who's doing that, right? Who's playing metal in their 40s? A few guys out there still, and if they're doing it, hats off to them, man. Go see them. Seek it out. New record tomorrow. Get it on iTunes. Love it. Death Angel. Real deal. Even if you're not into speed metal, just check it out. This guy's a great dude. He's got a great story. I love it. We talked about San Francisco. We talked about the early metal scene. You know, everything to do with the Bay Area. They're going to be at the Whiskey October 19th. I'm going to be there. I'll be in the pit.
Into the pit, yeah.
I'm going to jump in the pit. Remember that? Get in the pit. Throw your arms around. Start fucking bashing into dudes, fall down, someone picks you up, sorry brother, then you're back into it, beating each other, yeah, fucking crazy. Yeah, no, I'm out of my mind today, sorry, I'm just up too early. I can't stand being up early. There's two things I hate, being up early and rent. Fuck both those. Something cool this Sunday, I'm gonna be at the Ice House with Mark Maron. Come out and see me. I'm so fired up. I'm opening for Mark Maron. I mean, what the fuck? Nothing cooler. Nothing cooler than that. Right there, Ice House, October 13th, this Sunday. Get your tickets online before they're gone. Please come party with us. It's an early show, 7 o'clock. So don't give me none of that. Oh, I got to get up early for work. Nah, fuck that. Get up. Get up. Get up. Come see us. Get out of your house. Stupid. I'm being stupid. Sorry. Also, few tickets left. Please get your tickets if you come to see me, Brian Redband, and Christian Spicer. I'll be headlining the Punchline. Death Squad people, come out. Party with us. November 20th, Punchline. Me, Brian Redband, and Christian Spicer. That's metal right there. Metal. Everything's metal today.
Metal.
Stupid. All right, guys. I love you, man. If you're listening, this is second episode on All Things Comedy. If you're just finding me from All Things Comedy, welcome. Thanks. Glad to have you. All Things Comedy, so cool. Bill Burr, Al Magicals Network. Thanks for having me, guys. I love it. All Things Comedy, check it out. If you're an old fan of Let There Be Talk, check out allthingscomedy.com. Very cool. I'm on the network now. I'm proud to be there. Okay, guys. I'm out. I'm babbling. I'm saying stupid shit. You want to donate? Hit me at deandelray@yahoo.com. Donate some nickels. Anything helps to keep this machine rolling. If not, all cool. Sit back and enjoy the ride. Here it is. Mark Osegueda, Death Angel.
Yeah.
Guilty of no crime. Not enough yet. Too much time. I'm burning in this hell. Plans to buy and dreams to sell.
Hey, here we are. Another episode of Let There Be Talk. Dean Del Rey. Got a crazy guest today, man. I, Introduce yourself.
Mark Osegueda from Death Angel.
How long have we known each other?
Me and Dean Del Rey go back to, I'm guessing, 85?
80. When did you join the band?
84.
Because I did see the band a bunch before you were in.
Yeah.
A little bit. And then, yeah, so 84. I mean, I was a senior in high school.
Yeah.
And what grade were you in?
In 84, I was a freshman in high school.
Now, one of my oldest memories of Death Angel, and I don't know if you were in the band. I was trying to figure it out. Opening for Merciful Fate.
I introduced the band. Our next show was my first show, which was Megadeth, Death Angel at the Stone. November 26, 1984 was my first show. But I introduced...
Kabuki Theater.
Kabuki Theater.
Don't break the OTR.
Yep, exactly.
I remember it because I didn't think you were in, but also I did a lot of drugs, so I couldn't really remember.
Huh, you fit right in.
Yeah. But the thing was... I do remember it was probably the first time I saw Death Angel, and I remember really blatantly Kill Is One.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the fuck? This is amazing.
Well,
man.
No, Kill Is One was with me.
Not Kill Is One. What's the instrumental?
The Ultraviolence.
That's what I remember.
Exactly.
Because it was just this incredible instrumental, and I was like, what the fuck? And it was synchronized headbanging. Kabuki Theater.
11 minutes.
Yeah.
11-minute instrumental.
The Ultraviolence record, I re-listened to it today because I hadn't listened to it in a while, and I feel the blueprints of San Fran are, of course you have Kill 'Em All, but that's not for me. I like the Ride the Lightning, Bonded by Blood, and the Ultraviolence.
I'm a Ride the Lightning guy myself.
Me too.
I say it time and time again to people. I'm like, I was there for Kill 'Em All. Yep.
Yeah.
But the first time I put on Ride the Lightning... And the needle was... And I heard the acoustic thing. And when the production came in, I went, oh, God.
And the songs.
They won.
The songs, right? I mean, but I really feel like when I was listening to Ultraviolence today, I was like, man, I could feel the Stone. I could feel Rock on Broadway, Ruthie's, River Theater.
Exactly.
Remember River Theater?
Of course I do.
God
River
damn,
River Theater was amazing
man.
In Guerneville.
I mean,
you can taste the Bay Area on that record.
I really feel those are the three records. Yeah. Of course, Master of Puppets is a masterpiece. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is when I think about the Stone, I think about those three records.
Yeah. I'm glad to be in there.
Yeah. Right? I mean,
absolutely.
How many years is it?
Ultraviolence came out in 87, so it's 26 years.
26 years.
Yeah.
It's so weird because, like, I just had Andreas Kisser on, and I think he's been playing metal for 30 years.
Oh, yeah.
And to think about, to play metal 30 years, you know, like Metallica or you guys or anyone that was around then and they're still playing, no way did you think that we'd still be playing or alive, right?
Definitely not.
Yeah, I know.
Definitely not. I mean... Don't get me wrong. I was hoping, you know, by the time I was 30, I'd be big. But, but as far as still playing, you know, in a band called Death Angel, no idea that I would 26 years later from our debut album. It's a blessing, though. You know, it helps keep me young.
Right? How old are you?
44.
44, yeah. I'm 47. Yeah. So I was thinking about that today, too, which is like when we were in high school, we were playing these clubs, Mabue, The Stone, Rock on Broadway, and it's such a weird mindset, right? Like, you go to school the next day, and people would be like, hey, did you see, like, Mork and Mindy? And you're like, nah, I saw titties and a couple good fights, and I drank some Jaeger. Yeah. Isn't it a different world?
Completely different.
Like, what school did you go to?
Clayton Valley High School in Concord, California.
Is that KUSS or
KVHS?
KVHS.
Yep.
Yeah,
we had the radio program there.
They had a great station.
It was for that area in Contra Costa County at that time. In that area, for you know how far it reached out, they had higher ratings than KRQR, which was the big rock station
right.
at the time.
They were. I remember I did a benefit for them at the some theater, but they played the shit out of my band Ghost Town and made the band huge.
Yeah,
you know, which is incredible. They had a lot of power. KUSF, of course, like Howie Klein, you know, and all those guys.
Ron Quintana, the man.
There he is. Yeah. How about a little?
And Terrible Ten.
I was also thinking weird shit today. The Record Vault.
Love the Record
Vault. Let's talk about that place,
Polk
man.
Street.
Polk Street at the on the Queens side of Polk.
Yeah, Upper Polk.
Upper Polk. That place was the ground zero for metal.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's where I got all my records, you know?
Absolutely.
That
and
place.
And bootleg t-shirts.
Oh.
And bootleg cassette tapes.
Yep.
From, you know.
They had the bootlegs.
Everywhere. Yep.
It's so amazing,
it
man.
Incredible. I had the Yngwie Malmsteen Rising Force demo.
Yeah.
I bought that there. Merciful Fate, live Merciful Fate in, you know, Eindhoven. Venom Live. I bought all these bootlegs there.
Yep.
Absolutely incredible.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you something, of course, just because a lot of people will know, but I just like to refresh it. Now, the band's playing, and you're not in the band. You're like, what, a roadie or something?
Yeah.
And then what makes you become the singer?
I was already taking voice lessons and stuff. I loved music my entire life, and we were cousins. And, you know, I was already, as I said, I was already taking voice lessons, and they had the band going for about a year and a half before I joined. And then I thought I was going to form a band with different friends of mine. And me and Rob went to the same high school. And then eventually, you know, I went and saw him, and he's like, hey, why don't you help us out, roadie? And I was like, oh, yeah, sure, roadie, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
14,
that's
15,
just to go.
I couldn't even drive.
Yeah, that's, you know, just to go. Hang out.
Exactly. Hang out and help him bring the amps in, and that was it. And then one time they said, you know, hey, we need someone to introduce a band. You want to introduce a band? I was like, hell yeah.
That was at the Kabuki?
No, it was before. There was Keystone Berkeley.
Oh.
First time I introduced him. And then I did, you know, came up with a little saying thing. And then after I said Death Angel, I did this long, high-pitched scream, you know, and people were like, what the hell?
Yeah, yeah. Which is kind of your trademark now, right?
Yeah, and then including Rob and people in the band. Then eventually, they, you know, after that, it was kind of the thing, like, introduce us, and I do the scream. And then the Merciful Fate show was the very last time that I did that. And then after the Merciful Fate show, Rob's like, I've been working on this new song, and we need someone who could scream. Why don't you come down to the rehearsal place, which was Andy's mom's garage in Daly City. And we went down, and the song was called Kill Is One.
Right.
And it had like three epic screams
That's
in it.
It.
You know, I hit him, and then after that, he's like, but it was ironic because they never said, yeah, you're in the band. They're all, yeah, sing that song. And so we'd play live, and it started with one song.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then they came up with a song, Final Death, and it started with two songs. And then after a while, you know, it was three songs.
Yeah.
And it kept growing. But there was never, you're in the band. And all of a sudden, we started recording the record. And then I'm like, oh, I guess I'm in the band.
Yeah, right? You know? Voracious Souls is the fucking, like, just a classic to me. You know, I think it's like one of the best songs to come out of the Bay Area. You know, it's pretty fucking good, man.
You know, to think it was written by, you know, kids that were 14 to 16 years old, and ironically enough, that's the first song I ever had a hand in writing. I wrote that chorus, and I had it already. I'd been singing that in the shower.
Yeah.
One time I just came up with a chorus that sounded metal. That song didn't exist yet, but I was like singing in the shower. I'm like, man without anguish, you know, just like in the shower. I was like, hey, that sounds cool. And I came up with the lyrics. And that was it. I always sang it to myself, and I had those three lines. And then Rob wrote the, you know, the music to it, and we hit this chorus part. I'm like, I got something for that.
Yeah.
You know, it fit perfect. And then, you know, he went, you know, hit the mellow part in the middle, and I sang it quiet, and then we up-tempo again, you know, and then it stuck. And it's ironic enough that the first thing I ever wrote for Death Angel is, like, one of the most endearing things to people in thrash.
Oh, it's iconic, man. You know? It's weird, too, to think about, like you said, 14 to 16-year-olds. I mean, there's no kids that are playing now, of course, you know. It's like, you know, boy bands and shit. Like, if you look at you guys, you think, like the technique and how difficult it is to play thrash metal, and you guys are just killing it at, like, 16.
It was an oddity then. I definitely, even before I joined the band, you know, that's when I would, you know, watch the guys, and they were, like, 10 to 14 at that time. And then when I joined, it was, like, 12 to 16. And
Andy was 12?
Yeah, when I joined.
Everybody always talked about that too. Like, you got to see this kid. He's 12. Plays the fuck out of the drums. Yeah. You know,
it was definitely, you know, interesting. And the funny thing is, I was like, hey, why does everyone think it's freakish? You know why? And now when I look at pictures or video from back then, I'm like, oh, I get it.
Yeah. You know, but well, first they're all Filipino guys,
right?
Which is way unusual. And then
in metal back then,
in metal,
absolutely.
Yeah, because metal is just like white guys. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's so weird. And then, you know, you have, they're super young. And then they play the shit out of their instrument. Like, whenever you see young guys, it'll always be like, oh, you got to see them. And then you go, they're cool for their age. Yeah, you get it. But it's not like you guys, man, you know?
You know, it's interesting. Yeah, we garnered a lot of attention, which was good. Eventually, you know, we thought it haunted us with that overshadowing the fact that we were musicians. But in the Bay Area, that wasn't the case. But in press outside the Bay Area, that seemed to be the case. But
yeah, because if you really look at it now, like, Metallica was only a couple years older. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they seemed like, didn't, when you look at them, I mean, we were hanging around them back then. They seemed like older dudes, right? Didn't they? I mean, they like, really, I think, like, Hetfield's like 50. He's probably 3 years older than me or something. He just turned 50.
Yep.
But when I was 14 and he's, say, 17 or 18, they were drinking Jägermeister, him and Jim Martin, and they looked just like these men. Like, they had weird, they had crazy facial hair, and they were fucking drinking, and they're like, fuck you, get out of here, die. And they're like, whoa.
And, yeah, and the energy on stage was just, wow.
Just so, man, you know, right?
Yeah.
It's crazy to think, like, how much older they seemed, and now they just seem like our age.
Yeah, well, it all catches up. It all catches up, or we all catch up. But
right,
you know, they're still bringing it. I just got back from New York. I went to the Apollo show.
Oh man, I wanted to go to that.
It was insane.
I went to the 30-year, and that's when I saw you.
Yeah.
I see you occasionally every couple years, which is amazing. Like, and like, we just took a picture together, and I said, still alive. That's great, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're still alive, and now here's this resurgence of metal again, you know?
It's incredible.
Like, it's incredible. It really is. Like, kids love it. Like, I was talking to Andreas Kisser from Sepultura. I had him on the show, and he was like, yeah, man, we're, like, bigger than ever right now.
Yeah.
You know, and he loved Death Angel. We talk about Death Angel.
He's a spot on cat. We did some touring with them, and he's just great guy, amazing player, and he plays music for the right reason.
Yeah,
he loves it.
And so do you guys.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I mean, there's no money in it. People don't understand. There's no money. To play metal at 44, 45, 50, other than Metallica, it's just kind of like unheard of. And then, you know, it's a grind. You got to go out and do it. You don't make any money. I mean, you got wives. Some people have wives and kids. They're like, what are you doing?
Some people do.
Yeah. Do you? Yeah, not us. Right?
Yeah, no, I don't got a wife. Yeah,
no kids, right?
No kids. I mean, my life's kind of set up for touring, so.
There you go.
You know, and it's because what I love to do. You
now, where do you live now?
Currently, I've been staying in the city again.
Back in San Fran?
Yeah. Because
you were living in L.A. way before me.
I was down here for just a heartbeat, but not too long. I lived in New York for a couple years.
Yeah, and then, you got married, right? And you moved to New York when you quit the band.
Yep, that flailed. But you know, we're still dear friends with her. Still dear friends with New York.
Yeah, love it, right?
Oh God,
San Fran. I go there quite a bit to do comedy now, and it feels good again, you know. But it still has that money issue, right?
Oh yeah, it took a you know, its face changed completely from what it was in the 80s, from when, you know. It was a bunch of musicians and artists living there. And
it was blue collar.
Quirky city. Yeah. A quirky city. Now, and then, you know, when the startups and all that came along, it just, rehearsal places were closing.
Yep.
Venues were closing.
Venues closed like crazy,
fast,
right? DNA and Paradise, they were the hottest place. All of a sudden, they were gone.
Yeah, and the biggest drawing bands were cover bands.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden, the people that were residing in San Francisco, you know.
Had no taste.
Yeah.
They just wanted to go out, drink, and spend money because they're dot-commers.
Yeah.
And they were ruining it. Like, I mean, the I-Beam was gone. Then the Nightbreak was gone. Paradise was gone. DNA Lounge was gone. All of a sudden, you got a ghost town.
Yeah.
And it was weird, you know?
And, you know, it drove all the artists out to Oakland and Southern California, places that were affordable.
Exactly.
You know, people got to survive, and it's hard to survive when you're doing your art.
Yeah, you know, like, I think the key thing in my show all the time is I love to have people on that do what they do because they love it. Like, all artists, you know, musicians, painters, actors, whatever. You're not in it for the money. It's like, you know what I'm saying? We're fucking born this way.
Yeah.
And I would play rock right now if there was four guys on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people always go, why'd you stop playing music? It gets too hard. You got guys that have wives and kids. They can't go out on the road anymore. But if you set your life up like you or I, you can do it for life. And you don't need a high overhead, you know?
Yeah.
You just get out there and you play metal, and then look, boom, it comes back around.
Yeah, thank God.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And it's a younger generation now, too. I mean, the face of our crowd has changed completely in the last 3.5 years. You know, where before it was a lot of people throwback, like, yeah, you know, listening to the old stuff out of nostalgia. Now, you know, we got those people standing by the bar, but up front, it's insanity.
Yeah.
And it's a pit, but the pit now is, you know, ranging from 14 to 22-year-old kids going apeshit.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
They used to back then.
A lot of great stuff, too, that's like... That's bringing the metal back, too. Like that book, what is it?
Murder in the Front Row. Harold and Brian.
Yeah, Harold's book. And you know, when you see stuff like that and old DVDs, you go like, wow, man, that shit is fucking potent, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And I think kids want to get into that again, you
Definitely.
Know?
Definitely.
And also, whenever you have a bad economy and shit, metal rises.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Let's talk about
it is. It's blue collar. It's grassroots. It's, you know, and it's anti, you know, establishment.
It really is.
Yeah.
It really is. Let's talk a little bit about Frolic Through the Park. I like this record a lot. I really like it. I love Third Floor. I love Bored. What's the one? Something Sin.
The Shores of Sin. That was actually on Act 3.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's on Act 3?
Yeah.
I love that song, too.
Yeah,
but Frolic Through the Park, man, I really like that record.
It's a quirky record, that's for sure.
Yeah, do you like it? Because I saw...
I'm not a fan. I'm not. That's my least favorite record.
Tell me why. I'm just curious. Is it because of the production, the songs? What was
it? Yeah, I mean, production. It's just an odd era for us. You know, we went from being an absolute thrash band of young kids who got better at their instruments and got more open-minded to different types of music. And then started to bring those, try to incorporate those sounds into thrash, which was good.
Yeah.
But I think we pushed the envelope a little too much, and it just came out a little too jarbly for us.
Right.
But, you know, yeah, there's highlights, and my two highlights of that record are Bored and Third Floor, which we play still to this day. And Bored was colossal in making, you know, helping us get a name. That video when it came out.
So good.
And that catchy
Shot
little
Cat's
riff.
Shot in apartment, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
and that
Hate
catchy
Street.
Little riff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a...
I like it. It's kind of a... You know what I like about it is it really rings Hate Street to me.
Oh, yeah.
That era of Hate Street, kind of some Mother Love Bone was, going on at that time.
Yeah,
I'm not sure the year, but it seems like all kind of one era of this... Like, music was different. You know, you had, like, Faith No More.
Absolutely.
Things all mixed in. It wasn't, like, really a style. It wasn't like, this is metal. This It was crossing crossing genres and shit. And I really like it, know? I mean, some people don't.
No, I'm not a fan of it. But, you know, I love those two songs. But, ironically enough, some Death Angel fans, that's, like, absolutely their favorite record. And because it reminds me of high school, and it made me do... You know, I went through this with it, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, fucking bless them.
Yeah,
you know,
everyone's
different.
Whatever gets the
Bay City
people
Rollers. You know, I love the Bay City Rollers. And some people are like, what? I'm like, hey, I can't help it.
Yeah,
I love the Bay City Rollers. Reminds me when I was 8.
Yeah,
but
it's,
you know,
true.
They were the first boy men, but they played their instruments.
That's how music is, right? You whatever gets you into something, you know, like, of course, you guys are into Kiss. Like, we're all like Kiss guys, you know?
Yeah.
I don't really listen to Kiss much now.
Yeah.
But if I have to sit down and listen to Kiss, Creatures is my record now.
Oh, interesting.
You know what I mean? Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. When people go, well,
evolves.
With Death Angel, it's this. And some people say that. It's whatever gets you into the door.
Exactly.
That's all that matters, right?
Yeah.
Now, what kind of stuff were you guys listening to when you were like starting out? Of course, Metallica, right?
Yeah, well, when we first started out, it was more new wave of British heavy metal.
Saxon?
Yep. Iron Maiden, Saxon, Priest, Tigers of Pantang. You know, those first two Def Leppard records, On Through the Night, High and Dry.
Oh, God.
Brilliant.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
Know? Those
records.
Pete Willis years.
Oh, Pete Willis. I saw him open for Blackfoot at the Henry J. Kaiser.
Yep.
Remember, Pete Willis lost his guitar. He was leaning over. A guy snatched that fucking Hamer Explorer out of his hand, you know?
Yeah, that was when, you know, Def Leppard was peaking. A totally different band when I try to explain that to people, but, you know, they only know the...
Yeah. And it's those two records. You've been on the road, and I've been on the road all my life. I've been everywhere, so have you. When you go to, like, Sheffield, you know, where Def Leppard's from... I was there a couple years ago with the Stones.
Yeah.
And you look around and you think, how the fuck did this band get out of there? And they were like you guys, kids, 16,
and
they got out of there. You think about that, man. You go, they fucking got out of Sheffield. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And those records, man, High and Dry.
Colossal.
Is unbelievable,
High
man.
High and Dry is colossal.
Yeah, and Wasted off the you know, the first one.
On Through the Night, yeah.
No, On Through the Night. Brilliant. Man, that shit is insane.
It's brilliant.
Now, what about, somebody asked some people to tweet questions since we're on this topic here. A guy asked, Priest or Maiden? He wanted me to ask you guys.
Yeah, we've done that. I've had this debate. It's really odd.
You can't debate it.
It's so hard, yeah. It's so goddamn hard. You know, and it's just, it's almost too impossible to answer. But I think in the long run, you know, because I love them both so much and they both affected me so, you know, in so many ways. But, you know, just for longevity's sake, I gotta give it up to Priest. I got to.
Priest?
I got to give it up to Priest. For longevity's sake. From the Sad Wings of Destiny era to, you know, to by the time, you know, Point of Entry came out.
Oh.
And Screaming for Vengeance, it seemed like Screaming for Vengeance was almost like a comeback record, you know, because from the early stuff. So it's just like, you know, they've lived more lives than Maiden. So that's why, yeah. You know, it's just...
I
love Maiden. I love the Paul Di'Anno years. I love, you know, I saw him play Scorpions, Iron Maiden, Girl School at the Oakland Coliseum.
Unbelievable.
Iron Maiden, Saxon, Fastway at the Cow Palace. You know, it was like, come on.
Iron Maiden, what was that, Heart, Randy Rhoads, Ozzy,
Dan
DeGreen. Yeah, Scorpions. Foreigner. Foreigner. Remember that?
Ozzy opened.
I saw Ozzy open, man. Unbelievable. Yeah. I saw...
The Madman tour, the Cow Palace with Rhodes.
Yeah, I got the laminate from that.
I was there.
Remember the hand broke?
Yep.
The hand broke
exactly.
And they ended the show early. Yep. What a bunch of... I saw Rhodes twice. Supposed to see him three times because when they played Day in the Green, the day before they were playing Selland Arena, Fresno.
Yeah.
We went out there and they said Ozzy got food poisoning. Canceled it. I don't know what happened, but next day there he is. But Rhodes, right?
Amazing.
Those records are incredible.
Incredible. Max Norman.
Yeah, Max Norman.
Who ended up producing Act 3.
That's right. Let's talk about that now. Out of all the records you've had, who was your favorite producer to work with?
Well, I got to give it two eras. So in the first era, it would definitely be Max Norman.
Right. And what kind of stuff was he doing? Like, is this after he does... Ozzy record?
Yeah, so
okay.
He already did Blizzard of Oz, Diary of a Madman, you know, so to us he was, those records are so colossal to us. Working with him was like a dream come true.
Right.
So that was just otherworldly.
Now where'd you guys do that record?
Down here in LA at a place called Dodge City Sound, which is no longer there.
Oh, I know that one.
The building is, but...
It was on Sunset?
No, it was
Where
down,
was that?
Down by the observatory. Where the hell is it? I just drove by it not too long ago. I don't know this area too well anymore, but I just drove by it going to visit. Ironically enough, I was going to visit Roy Mayorga.
Yeah.
And it was right by his place. So wherever he lives, it's by his house. I know he likes Act 3, and I was like, believe it or not, dude, we recorded Act 3 2.5 blocks from where you live. It's that building, but it's no longer a studio.
Wow. Yeah, so, Max, now how about the new era? You got a new record coming out, but who produced that one?
A guy called Jason Sukoff. He produced this one. It's called The Dream Calls for Blood. Comes out here October 15th. He produced our record prior to that, this one, called Relentless Retribution.
I got Killing Season.
Oh, yeah. That was
done at Dave Grohl's studio.
Yeah, at 606.
Right, and
exactly.
Who did that one?
Nick Raskolnik. Who did a lot of Foo Fighters, is doing the last, I think, two Rush records.
Right.
Hell.
That studio's nice, right?
Gorgeous.
It's weird. You go to Van Nuys, like, I was just recently at Linda Perry's studio. I had Linda Perry on the show. You go over
love
to...
Linda.
Oh,
love
God.
Linda.
Yeah, right?
Of course. Got a long history with that woman. Love her to death.
Yeah, you gotta love her, man.
Yeah.
But when I think back to, like, Van Nuys, you know... Van Nuys feels metal to me because it's really a stepchild of L.A., right?
Absolutely.
And then you get out there and anything can be going on. One guy could be cooking meth and then one studio over, a fucking record's being made. And then here comes flights from Southwest, you know, flying right over you. It's weird out there.
It truly is. But, you know, Southern California is its own monster.
Yeah, it is. What do you like better, San Fran or Southern Cal?
I'm a San Francisco guy through and through. I am. I was born there. You know, I tried it down here for a bit, and it just, you know, just not. It's just not for me. It's just not. You
right.
Know, I have tons of friends down here. I have an amazing time down here for up to like 6 days, and then I just kind of I spin out.
Yeah.
I get back to, you know, my city. As much as my city has changed, the core people I have around me are incredible.
So, and what neighborhood are you living in?
Right now, I've been staying in Glen Park recently.
Glen Park? What's that like? That's out by the...
Cow Palace,
right.
Before the Excelsior. It's incredible.
Yeah.
It's incredible. I used to know it only as
It's all good.
I used to know it only as a BART station, and now it's become this whole neighborhood unto itself, and it's great, you know?
Yeah.
It's a great little place.
It kind of feels blue-collar out there still.
It's the original San Francisco. Basically, even when San Francisco was thriving, that's where real families lived. Like, my father grew up in the, moved from El Salvador, grew up in the Excelsior, went to Balboa. You know, it's kind of, that was old San Francisco, so to speak.
I think they have a kind of a white trash gang out there called Crocker Park. Crocker Park Boys, is that out there?
Man, they had all that stuff. Amazon Park,
Yeah. So, okay, man, it's so weird to talk to you. Like, you know, like I've known you so long, we just going through all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
What do you think your best memory of the Stone in San Fran was? Because I have people on, and the room was so iconic, right?
True.
I mean, you had CBGBs in New York. And you also had the Ritz, you know, back then when they were doing metal. They would do metal and rock in there.
Absolutely.
And that other place, Studio 54, where they did that famous DVD. I love. I have it.
Yeah, yeah. And Studio 54 became the new Ritz.
That's right. That's right. And then L.A., you have the whiskey and everything. Yeah. But no one ever talks about the Stone. And this is ground zero of Metallica, Exodus, Death Angel, Testament, Violence. I mean, every one of these fucking bands, and no one talks about it. Isn't it weird?
Yeah, it was incredible. Incredible. I guess favorite moments that I ever had at the Stone. I guess maybe the first time that we sold it out two nights in a row. And it was the irony behind it was, you know, back then it was a different scene altogether because we'd announce the two shows the week of.
Wow. Because it would just sell out instantly.
It was so kind of crazy. And I remember being, you know, this 18-year-old kid, you know, and Bobby Corona.
Yeah.
From the Stone. I would walk, just knock on the door, and he'd let me in. And, you know, I was 18.
I know, right?
My friends, and I was buying, you know, 24-year-old, 25-year-old girls drinks on my tab. I'm like, yeah. Well, these two girls were Mitchell Brothers. Yeah, they're on my tab.
Right? I remember I had my 21st birthday there, and he came up and slapped me in the face and said, hey, you fucker, you've been drinking here 4 years. You know what I mean?
So it was just, you know, a different era and, you know, playing there. The amazing bands I saw there play, you know.
Yeah, Slayer.
Oh, God.
On the South of Heaven tour.
My 16th birthday was Slayer Death Angel.
Oh.
16th birthday, Slayer Death Angel sold out.
At the Stone.
One of my favorite memories of all time, right?
Remember how high Dave Lombardo's drums were?
Insanity.
They were up in the roof.
Insane.
I never forgot it.
That was my 16th birthday show. So that's probably my favorite memory of there playing. Another great memory was, you know, in all honesty, just sucking. Seeing Guns N' Roses open for Jet Boy.
Yeah, right.
I was like, what?
Yeah.
Who's this band?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, these guys are good.
Yeah, these guys are fucking good.
Wow, right? It always felt like L.A. would come up and just dust us a little bit on their on the rock stuff.
Yeah,
not on the metal.
No, not
on the metal.
No,
because the San Fran owned metal.
Yeah.
But L.A. was having Motley Crue. And then later, of course, you had GNR, the biggest band of all.
Which it cracks me up because I totally remember that show. It was Jet Boy, Guns N' Roses, and Vane.
Yep. I still got the flyer.
Yeah, and I remember
you know
when Guns N' Roses came on. I'm like, what the hell? Man, and I kept thinking, these guys are fucking good.
I remember Axl had the snake jacket on.
Oh, yeah.
He had a snakeskin jacket.
A little fucking hat.
Yeah, he was just like kind of Rob Halford meets like rock.
Killed it.
God, man. I remember...
Slash had the fishnets on his arms.
Yeah. Remember that? He'd pull the fishnets up his arm. That was the look, man. Just anything went, right? Just throw chicks' clothes on. unless you were a metal guy.
Yeah.
Then it was
didn't fly up
skinny
there.
Black jean stretch.
Yeah.
With fucking white sneakers.
Yeah, and ripped t-shirt.
Ripped t-shirt
the sleeves,
and then
at least
a Levi vest over a leather jacket.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now you and I are clothes junkies, man. You love clothes like we used to bond over that all the time.
Yeah.
Like some of the old like North Beach leathers.
Collected that and East West leathers.
East West leathers.
I had all that because I used to manage after I quit Death Angel and moved back from New York. I used to manage Wasteland,
right,
which is pretty much iconic in the world of vintage clothing nowadays.
Oh, it was the number one place, too, on Haight Street.
On Haight Street, and I eventually became the manager of that place, and it was just, it was epic. It was some of the greatest years of my life were the years I spent working at Wasteland.
Yeah, right? Like, you really had no worries, right? You just go down, you fucking, somebody comes in, you get a, oh, I got a new jacket. You go up the street, you eat a burrito, and then at night, you go to the night break and watch some rock.
Incredible.
It really is, right?
And the crowd we traveled with, this group of misfits from, drag queens to, some of San Francisco's most hardcore dykes to metalheads to just, we all were this loony pack of, misfits that all got along.
It really was like Road Warrior, right?
It was beautiful.
If you look at, a group of guys coming down the street, it looks like Road Warrior.
Yeah.
You'd have some, like you said, some dykes. You'd have Ronnie there, like, hey!
It was Ronnie Rodriguez, Bad Ronald.
There he is.
It was probably, other than Death Angel, the greatest part of my life was the years I spent at Wasteland and the amazing, beautiful people I met working there.
Yeah, that's cool, too, because a lot of people look
at... Linda Perry being one.
There she is. A lot of people look at metal as, racist, or homophobic, or you know what I mean, like really radical, and that could be the furthest from the truth with most of the guys that you meet. You
definitely
know what I mean?
In San Francisco, that's
definitely
for sure.
In city. You know what I mean? Like if you went to a metal show, it was all styles of people there, which is cool. You know what I mean? Because you don't need that kind of stuff in the music world. It's about the music, you know.
Completely.
That's wild, man. All right, let's see here. When's the new record coming out?
October 15th.
October 15th, and I heard one of the songs.
Yeah.
The artwork's amazing.
It's
it has the three dogs on the front there. Kind of reminds me of the Rods.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit.
The Rods, right?
But also, I got a little flavor of the movie Omen when it had the Rottweilers at the grave.
It's vicious. It's a vicious, vicious cover, vicious record. Probably the most... venomous record we've done since the Ultraviolence, and it's just a vicious slab of thrash, but the production's just colossal.
Well, right away when I heard the first song, I was like, oh, this is like Ultraviolence. Yeah. What was the song that you had on the site yesterday?
Man, we have four up now, so gosh.
There was one that I heard yesterday, something Dream or something.
The Dream Calls for Blood,
the
title track.
Yeah, man, that was great.
Thank you.
And there's your scream, you know?
Yeah.
Where'd you guys do it at?
That's Sanford, Florida. That's where we did.
Like the last one, right?
Yeah. So we did that with Jason Sukoff, out of his studio out there. Complete immersion, no distractions from home. Went down there for about 8 weeks total, and just knocked it out, man. And it was incredible.
Now, you guys like recording there, obviously, right?
Yeah.
I remember last time you guys recorded there, you were doing filming stuff and putting it up and shit. What do you like about the place?
It's more that, we have no distractions from home. We love Jason's production style.
Yeah.
Who else
has he done?
He's done mostly a lot of more modern, new metal kind of bands. He did a lot of the Trivium stuff, August Burns Red, stuff that I'm, not necessarily overtly a fan of, but his production was what grabbed my ear.
Right.
And we just thought with his modern production style and our more organic kind of sound, we find a marriage between that, and it's going to be vicious. And we took the gamble and tried that with the last record, and it worked out perfectly.
Yeah.
And with this one, the material's even more vicious than the last one. So we thought we got to go with this, stick with something that works. And the new record is just off the charts, angry, in your face, and it's the best reviews and positive feedback we've gotten from the press and fans since the Ultraviolence.
Wow, that's fucking amazing,
right? Ripping. It's ripping.
Now, you're 44. You go out on the road. Do you have any voice problems? Or over the years, have you changed how you sang?
I've definitely, changed some things. But the thing was, I had to go back to, things I learned in the 80s to do it.
You know?
Took two different...
like voice teachers?
Yeah, two
Who did you go
styles.
To?
There was this woman, an opera teacher out of Pleasant Hill named Doris Balzo.
Right. Everybody went to her back in the day, right?
She was amazing.
It was like Davy Vane went to her. Like that, right?
And then there was a power coach singer, John Ford, I think was
Oh, John name. Ford. That was, John, that was my guy.
Yeah.
Man.
South of the Market.
He really taught me, actually.
Yeah.
I remember I was going to him for about a year.
Yeah.
And what people don't understand about singing is you can sing. But what we're talking about is the mechanics and the longevity.
Yeah.
Anybody can sing. If you can carry a tune, you go, well, I can sing. Okay, you're a singer. But after three songs, you go, I don't think I'm a singer.
Yeah.
You know, because you're like, then you're like,
2 hours for 24 days in a row,
And back then, with shitty monitors and Marshall amps on 100, you were just guessing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You just guess. But I remember a key thing Mark Ford taught me was, he said, to sing high notes is a lot like yawning. So when you yawn, you go, and that's how it comes out really easy. You can go high. And once he said that to me, it opened my mind and I became a singer.
Yeah.
And then it was about longevity of being able to sing for hours every night.
Yeah.
Because that gets hard. Do you do in-ear monitors?
No, I don't do in-ears. It's just too tough for me, and I like... And I know now they've been, they've come a long way. They're mixing in crowds with side microphones.
Right.
So that warmth. I'm thinking about trying them out. It's just, I just need that full power,
And
I wear earplugs every time I see other people play.
Yep.
I wear them at rehearsal every night. But some live, I still go, bare pickle, so to speak.
right? Do you have any hearing problems? Boy, my right ear is gone.
Yeah,
no?
Not yet.
Wow, you're good,
not
huh?
Not yet.
I mean, I don't have any ringing, but my right ear, I just don't hear it. My phone be here, and the guy, dude, that's your phone.
Yeah.
I mean, oh, thanks. Right? Fucking metal back then was
Jesus.
Loud.
Insane.
Like, the Stone
Insane.
Would be, like, if you go see Metallica or Death Angel back then, it was fucking loud.
Yeah.
I remember just a guy would come on and hit the guitar just to make sure it was on. And you go, whoa, fuck.
Truly.
That shit is crazy.
Truly.
Let me ask you something about the dreads. You've had dreads. You didn't have them when I first knew you, but then it's... I think it happened with the organization, really?
I wasn't in the organization. That was everyone in Death Angel without me.
Okay, which band... Because it seemed to me like all of a sudden everyone had dreads.
Well, that's when Swarm... I moved back from New
Swarm.
York. Swarm. And I already had my dreads. So it's been... just under 21 years that I've had them.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Now... The band didn't have them, and you came out and they said, let's have dreads. Because I remember going to see you all had dreads.
We weren't in contact, and I contacted Rob out of the blue saying I wanted to, write music with him. And, we happened to meet up to write music, and he had them. And I was like, well, I don't even know, because me and him weren't even in contact. And then, he had this bassist named Michael who he was jamming with, who, acoustic stuff with, who happened to have dreads. And then we couldn't find a drummer, and he was in contact with Andy. And at first, I'm like, I don't want to jam with Andy again, blah, blah, blah. And then he kind of talked me into it. And then I saw Andy, and Andy had dreads. And at first, I was like, I don't want to be in a band with everyone having dreads.
Dude, right?
It's kind of weird. And then, but eventually, the music, kind of outweighed that. And, then eventually everyone's dreads kind of went away. And, I still have mine.
Yeah.
Almost 21 years later. I don't know how much longer I'm going to have them.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You think you're going to get rid of them?
Yeah,
What is the maintenance on dreads?
And
how do you make them? Did they just get dirty and you pull it? How does it work?
The maintenance is a lot at first, but once you get it, once they take, it's not much at all.
Right.
I had, the reason I've kept them so long, tell you the truth, I got them in, 93? And thought, I'll have it, because I was either going to... I had long hair pretty much my entire, teenage life.
Of course.
Thought, maybe you can cut my head, but cut my hair off. Before I do, let me see what I look like with dreads. And I had a good friend, another San Francisco legend at the time. Her name was Carmel. Used to own a
salon. I remember Carmel.
Pink Tarantula.
Yeah. Man, so, I forgot about that.
Love that woman.
God damn.
Love that woman. So she...
She shaved my head.
She dreaded my hair.
Yeah.
Wonderful Australian woman, moved to San Francisco. Credible woman. And then she dreaded my hair. And, you know, we became really good friends, hit it off, would hang out a lot. And then, you know, I assumed I'd out, you know, have them for a few years, and they were growing out. And I was getting, you know, they were getting pretty long, and I kind of liked them. And then it was hitting the time where I was contemplating, like, do I want them much longer? And then, unfortunately, Carmel got murdered.
Yeah.
And then when she got murdered, it was kind of like, in me, I was like, you know what? As a tribute to her, I'm going to keep them for 20 years. And it's been going on 21 soon, and, you know.
Yeah,
you know.
Wow, that's cool. That's a cool story.
Yeah, I love that.
I remember when that whole thing went down.
Yeah,
it's
brutal. Think about her often. Love
that's
that
crazy, man. Well, let's see. I was going to ask you some other stuff. First of all, it's just great to see you.
You too, man.
Which is really cool. I remember last time I saw you. Besides the Stone or the Fillmore Metallica, David Lee Roth rehearsals. Forum, me, you, Kirk Hammett at the soundboard watching that Friends and Family. Remember that?
Absolutely. It was
How do you like that, man?
I went with Kirk, Scott Ian, Brian Posehn, Scott's wife Pearl. That was one of the most insane nights of my life.
Remember Zakk Wylde was drunk?
Trying to get
on stage.
He went
up to the front, was trying to get on stage with Eddie, and Eddie like shot him down, like, get the fuck out of here.
David Lee Roth goes, hey, Are you an entertainer? Are you in the entertainment business? Get off my stage.
Unbelievable, right? That was a great night. There we are in the Forum watching Van Halen with, what do you think, like 250 people?
200 people, yeah.
In the Forum, man. It's incredible.
One of the best nights of my life.
God damn, right? Because there it is, Roth's back in the band. He hadn't been in 100 years.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody's like, what's it going to be like? And I think they opened with, like, fucking Unchained or something.
Every lick, you know, every drum fill, you know, every, you know, it was beautiful.
It was iconic. Do you miss Mike Anthony?
You know, of course, because I'm a nostalgic guy.
Right. I only ask because I know when people see Death Angel, they miss members.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I'm a nostalgic guy, but I'm a realist. I know how things like this work.
That's right.
So, you know, as long as you keep the crowd interested and you know, keep it going, you know, people are going to do it. And I think that's a great thing about this band. The amount of touring we did in the last 3 years for the last record garnered us a new fan base that don't even know us with the original members. They have to actually go back to get their early material to find out about that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we've earned respect of people who wrote us off and a whole new crowd. So it's been nice.
I think that people, they're always just so delusional all the time, right? Like, hey, when are you going to get the original lineup back together? And you go, hey, man, it's 26 years ago.
Exactly.
Or so, you know what I mean? Like,
and if they wanted to be here, they would.
I know.
But they're not.
They could easily be there.
So why don't we get some people in here that want to do this, and we're going to do this for the right reasons.
Bands are hard, right?
They're getting easier lately, though.
They are getting easier.
Yeah.
When things are good,
bands are good.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, if things start getting rough, you get that one guy that's really not in it for life, not a lifer, and he starts asking dumb questions like, what are we doing? How come we don't play my songs? Where's the money? That kind of shit. You're like, hey, dude, if there was money, you know, we would all have it.
Exactly.
There's not two guys hiding money here. You know what I mean? I always say that to people. They trip out
on
that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, there you go. You see the 200 people out there? That's not 2,000.
Yeah.
You know, or 20,000 or whatever. People, they're delusional, you know?
Yeah.
It's a trip. Now, how long have you been friends with Kirk Hammett?
Since 1985.
Good friend, right? I mean,
one of my best friends. I was the best man at his wedding. We've been through hell and back together. Love that man to death.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Man, I think he's just so fucking great.
Like, cool cat.
What did I trip on it with?
Good head on his shoulders.
Yeah,
too.
Right? He's just a great dude. I mean, all those guys became good dudes.
Yeah.
You know, like early on, it was the metal scene was strange. You'd see like Kirk or say Hetfield, and you'd be like, oh my God, that's Hetfield. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And little
intimidating force.
Yeah, right?
Sure.
That whole thing, man. That's great. Now, have you guys, I can't remember, did you ever open for Metallica?
At the Kabuki, two nights, the Ride the Lightning Tour.
Oh, man, I don't even remember.
Two nights.
Remember when they played the Kabuki the night before Day on the Green?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, they played a night, but it wasn't that night, right?
Yeah.
Now, do you think you'll ever get to go out with them? Because they took Machine Head out for a long time.
Yeah, they sure did.
On that record, that was amazing.
Yeah. So now, I mean, who knows? Hopefully, fingers crossed, someday. You know, we're putting out strong material, getting great reviews. You know, James was a fan of the last record, and hopefully he is of the new one. Kirk's very fond of the last record and the new one, so it's a matter of time. We're just sticking to our guns and do what we love to do.
Yeah, know? Yeah.
Hopefully that pieces fall into place.
That's what Machine Head did, right? Yeah. I mean, that Blackened, the Blackening or whatever, that record is incredible.
Yeah, great
you know? Well, fuck, man. Congrats on the new record.
Thank
now
you,
it comes
man.
Out. This will drop on Monday, so it comes out next Tuesday, right?
Yeah, October 15th.
And then you guys are playing the Whiskey.
October 19th.
Yeah.
Saturday, October
19th. I'm going. I'm going.
It's gonna rock. And everyone who goes gets a free copy of the new CD.
Is that right?
Yeah, man.
Shit. Well, I got to go. Can you put me on the list?
I'm
broke.
It's on.
That's going to be great. And then what do you got, a tour?
Yeah, that's it. The third night of the tour. We're doing two nights in San Francisco at Slim's.
At Slim's.
Yep.
That's great, right?
Yep. It's Thursday, Friday at Slim's. Then the 19th here, which is Saturday at the Whiskey. And then from there, we just start working our way west.
Wow. And then how long are you out for?
About 4 weeks, then like a week and a half off. Then we do Europe for 4 weeks, take time off for the holidays, then we start back up in January again.
And you guys are on Nuclear Blast. And they just got Machine Head.
Yeah, yeah.
They have Testament.
Us, you know, they're running the gamut on metal.
Yeah, right? Sure. That's. Yeah. I mean, they're fucking smart, just grabbing bands. I mean, it's going to sell, you know? Well, fuck. Congrats, man.
Thank you.
And I'll see you soon.
Hell yeah, you will.
And then where they can find you, you got a Twitter, right?
Yeah, we got a Twitter. It's all under Death Angel. Our website's www.deathangel.us. And other than that, you know, Facebook, Death Angel. We got a Twitter. I don't know what the hell it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Ted, our guitarist, keeps, in, you know, on top of that.
Twitter's good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Twitter's good because
he's on it.
Yeah, fans really like it, you know.
Ted's
like
all over it.
If you just tweet, like, you know, about to go on, first song, Kill Is One or whatever. People get into it like, I wish I was there.
Yeah, it's great.
Well, congrats, man.
Thank you.
Great to see you. And one last thing. We're here at the joint, and you're going to be DJing tonight, right?
I am. I'm doing my first DJing stint. I haven't done, Kill Is One.
Yeah.
I haven't DJed here. I mean, DJed since my eighth grade high school dance, so. This would be interesting.
Yeah. And you're just going to spin.
I got to do it. It's a metal night. So, an hour of metal. I get an hour of metal, then we're going to spin the entire new Death Angel record.
Oh, that's great, man. Yeah. Well, shit. I can't wait to see you next week.
It's going to be rocking.
And thanks for doing it.
Thank you.
There you go, guys. Thanks
great
for tuning in to Let There Be Talk. Don't forget, check out the new Death Angel album coming out tomorrow. Get that thing on iTunes immediately or wherever is it on vinyl?
Yeah, we're doing a vinyl.
Oh, yeah. Get it on vinyl. Yeah, hell yeah.
Double gateful of vinyl.
Fuck, I need that. That's what I need. All right, there you guys go. Thank you for tuning in. See ya.